DW Deutsche Welle. Spectrum.
Hello and welcome to Spectrum. I'm Gabriel Borrud in Bonn, Germany. On this week's show, we're going to take a look at the EU's new data protection laws. And we'll meet somebody who is offering all of his Facebook data on eBay, partly to see what they're worth and partly to prove a point. We're also gearing up for the Horizons launch. German astronaut Alexander Gerst will be blasting back up to space, and he's soon to command the International Space Station. We'll take a look at some of the experiments that are planned and also how Astro Alex is trying to get young people interested in space. All that and more is coming up, so stick with me this week on Spectrum, DW's Science Radio Weekly.
Does internet privacy really exist? No. No, it doesn't. Internet privacy involves the right...
This past week, the European Union enacted the world's toughest laws to protect people's online data. If you live anywhere on this continent, you're certain to have received an email or two about this, as companies have been sending updates to their privacy policy en masse. The new measures, called GDPR, let users track and reduce the information they leave behind when doing anything online. All this data can now be requested, and it can be deleted. Businesses, from big to small, must also let users know how their data is handled. And a higher bar has been set for how personal information is used to target advertising. If these companies do not comply, they will risk penalties greater than $1 billion.
Who you are, where you are, what you're doing, what do you like buying, what do you not like buying, what's your income, what's your weight, what porn do you watch, what normal videos do you watch, who are your friends, who do you like talking to, who do you not like talking to. These are the kind of things that most companies know about you from the second.
Awareness to what is happening with online data is growing. This is just one video that has surfaced from privacy consultant Dylan Curran in Ireland. Europe is now effectively the world's toughest watchdog when it comes to online data. And there's good reason for this. The amount of money that is made with people's information, whether they know it or not, is immense. But how much is this data really worth? To find out a concrete answer to this abstract question, a guy by the name of Ollie Frost from London requested all of his data from Facebook. With the new GDPR, this is readily available. He downloaded every search, every picture, every like that Facebook has saved of his for the past 10 years, and he put it all on eBay with a starting bid of 99 cents. I found out about this past Wednesday and gave Ollie a call to see how high people were bidding on his personal Facebook information.
Last night, it got up to £300 and 44 bidders, and then shortly after that, actually got taken down by eBay.
eBay took it down?
Yeah, they said that you couldn't sell personal data, which is quite ironic, given that that's what that's happening on a much larger scale every day.
Yeah. Well, were you happy with the £300? Would that have been
a good figure? I might have taken £300, but I think I had another 5 days to go on the auction. So most of it happens in the last 5 minutes on eBay. So, you know, it might have gone a little bit higher.
Were you serious when you did this? You put your dad up for sale?
Yeah. I've got a USB key with everything on there since I was 16 and I joined Facebook 10 years ago. And, you know, I think, to be fair, you know, if someone bought it, then I'd give it to them.
You would have given them everything about you?
Yeah. I mean, that was the thought. You know, I did say that they weren't allowed to, you know, steal my identity and open a sweatshop. But,
that was the one rule. No sweatshops.
That was the one rule, you know. No sweatshop.
What do you think Facebook knows, or how well do you think Facebook knows you from your data?
Well, I would say not as well as my mum. And, you know, not Facebook can't quite compare to my mum. But, yeah, I mean, they've got a profile, surely, but that's not part of what they include in the data that you download. They just give you the information, but they don't give you, I guess, any judgment they might have made about it.
Ali Frost on the line there. An atrocious line. I'm really sorry about that. From London.
Hey now, all you sinners, put your lights on. Put your lights on. Hey now, all you lovers, put your lights on. Put your lights on. Hey now, all you killers, put your lights on.
The countdown has begun. On Wednesday afternoon, German astronaut Alexander Gerst will be blasting off from Baikonur in Kazakhstan. He is heading back to the International Space Station, but this time he will assume command of the ISS and be the first German to do so. June 6th is the start of the Horizon space mission that will conduct a slew of experiments 400 kilometers above the Earth's surface to get a better sense of what Gerst is going to be doing up there on the ISS and what it means for German science that he's going up there in a commanding role. Here is Fabian Schmidt, DW science editor.
Yeah, he's actually the second European space station commander of all times. He's the first German. Of course, it's important, and the main reason why it's important is because Germany is playing an ever-increasing role in space science. We do have pretty good scientific technology and development, and lots of institutes are producing good stuff, not just satellites, but also, for example, the life support module of the Orion spacecraft. The new NASA spacecraft is going to be built in Germany. And so it just basically is a symbol to some extent of how important Germany is in space today.
What is Gerst going to be doing as commander on the ISS?
Basically, the question or the task of a commander is preparing and doing the briefings and everything with all the other people up there in space. So the preparation and the post-flight work. But of course, he has to basically make the decisions up there if there are any decisions to be made that that aren't already clear. Usually, because astronauts are astronauts, everybody's pretty much working for themselves. So it's not really to be expected that there are going to be any conflicts. So nobody has to play a Captain Bly role aboard the ISS, but someone has to basically have that role of a commander, and that's what he has. Important thing is social competence and probably a lot of patience and keeping an overview of what's going on. That's basically what a commander does.
There's been a lot of talk of the science that's going to be done up there in space. 300 experiments on the Horizons mission. Can you give us a sense of a couple of those, or pick out a couple that might be important for scientific discoveries?
Gerst himself is doing 50 of those experiments. There are all kinds of experiments from material sciences, for example, about how particles behave under zero gravity. There is one experiment in which animals on the surface of the Earth are equipped with radio transmitters.
Are you talking about Icarus?
Yeah, Icarus. It's called. It's a it's an experiment where birds but also water living animals can be equipped with little transmitters and then tracked by the ISS as they move around. There are all kinds of interesting things. A lot deals with human medicine in space. So every astronaut is basically a test rabbit, so to say, a guinea pig in space. And Alexander Gerst is also one of those, yeah.
Fabian, what can we learn from an experiment conducted in space? Why are these particularly important?
The zero gravity aspect is very important because under zero gravity, materials behave differently. Our human body behaves differently. Things happen that we can't simulate on Earth. So, for example, the blood vessels behave differently. Different things inside the body start moving in other ways. For example, we know that salt is reacting totally differently. Natrium content, sodium content. As it's called in English. There were some interesting discoveries dealing with blood pressure and the importance of sodium in that in the past. What Gerst is doing this time is dealing with the question of the immune responses to stress. This is a new project that will go on with him. The zero gravity environment basically allows you to investigate all kinds of other things that you couldn't do before. One, for example, is that there is a cold atoms lab. It's the coldest place in the universe. It will be on the ISS. It's already up there. And Gerst will have to do this experiment. It's a tiny box, but in the center of it is a very little space, which is being cooled down to just millions of Kelvin, but there will be a couple nano Kelvin. So it's not total zero, but almost zero. And in this environment, atoms start behaving differently. This has to do with basically particle science. Very intriguing because there is a new state of matter called the Bose-Einstein condensate. And within this tiny frame, they can create that and look at how particles behave within that condensate. Crazy particle science, which is difficult to understand.
Apart from the science that Gerst is going to be doing up there, he's also going to be reaching out.
Yeah, besides, of course, he has already over a million Twitter followers, but which he actually pioneered as an astronaut who was constantly on Twitter and posting pictures that he took himself with his private camera from space. But he does a couple other funny things. Young people are very important to him. So what he takes along is the mouse and the elephant. Okay, the mouse and the elephant are two characters from a very good and well done German TV production, which basically is an educational program for children in which they learn about, you know, basics of our world and how things function.
The mouse and the elephant, we're hearing them right now.
Yes.
Why is he bringing them up there?
Yes, the mouse and the elephant are there to basically go up into space and try something out. They're trying out a little toy rocket which is going to fly around within the ISS, and it's going to be then put into this children's program, TV program, and it's basically going to take the kids along to the ISS with the mouse and the elephant. By the way, the mouse has already been in space once during Gerst's previous flight. The elephant is a new astronaut. He wasn't there yet before, and he will be back.
And this is going to get kids interested in space.
It's definitely going to get kids interested in space.
Do you believe it's going to work as a German?
Yes, definitely. Mouse always works. The mouse is a great character. Every German loves the mouse because it's such a very simplistic character, a cartoon character, but also can explain everything to the kids.
Okay, so the kids are excited. The scientists out there are excited. What about you personally? I mean, there's been a lot of talk about how interesting and how important this Horizons mission is going to be. What about you personally as a journalist? Are you excited about this thing?
Yes, because we're reporting about it, and it's always a lot of excitement getting everything right. Reporting from the start, reporting from the first live call that he will make down to Earth with journalists. We're part of that as Deutsche Welle. And yeah, it is exciting, and it's going to be exciting at least for next half year, because he's up there until December, and before Christmas he will be back, and then we'll hopefully get an opportunity to talk to him personally and do a longer interview with him about how it was once he's accommodated and settled in.
DW Deutsche Welle. Spectrum.
Many thanks to Fabian Schmidt, my colleague here on DW's Science Desk. And as he said there, some pretty groundbreaking science is going to be done on the ISS over the next 6 months. One of those experiments will be the work of Lars Karlsson of Stockholm, Sweden's Karolinska Institutet. He will be using the ISS to study the lungs, not only to understand better what space conditions do to astronauts, but also to find better ways to monitor and treat health conditions down here, like asthma. I caught up with him at the European Astronaut Center in Cologne, Germany.
So we are fortunate to do experiments on astronauts. We do tests before they fly up to space, and then we do the exact same tests on ISS in microgravity. So we can look at the lung in normal gravity, as you and I experience right now, and in zero gravity, as in space. And as a researcher, I like to use extremes to learn more about the normal condition. On Earth, we get one kind of results, and in flight, we're going to get one kind of results. And by removing gravity, that's the only difference for him. Then we can compare and see what can, because we know that when you take away the gravity, the blood and the gas in the lungs move differently. And by using that knowledge, we can sort of pinpoint more about this gas, nitric oxide, where it comes from. And we also use another extreme. So here on Earth, we do tests at reduced pressure with Alexander Gerst. And then in flight, we're going to do the exact same experiment at a reduced pressure. And when you reduce the pressure, you alter how the gas moves in the lungs. So that's also an extreme. So we use different pressures and different gravities, so extremes, but to learn more about normal. But it's difficult.
And how, again, is this going to help people like my mom? Mm. How can this help people with asthma?
Yeah, we hope to learn more about how this biomarker sort of works. And by doing that, you could help to improve the clinical use of this tracer gas, of this biomarker. And you can also hopefully design better medication. And for space travelers like Alexander Gerst, we use this experiment to do a baseline, so we can use this technique to follow up on his lung health when he is in space.
Are you confident that this is going to result in better medications, better inhalers for asthma patients?
I truly hope so. I truly hope so. But as a researcher, I'm doing sort of basic research. So that's the next step. We are laying the ground, so to say, for better clinical work and better medicines.
Lars Karlsson speaking to me at the EAC in Cologne, Germany. Thank you. Another thing that Fabian talked about before is how Horizons will try to get young people interested in space and this mission. Well, our next guest is directly involved in that because there is a competition involving students and computer programming on the ISS. Her name is Alana Bartolini. She works for ESA in the Netherlands, and I met her at the EAC while she was giving a presentation before hundreds of journalists, holding a little computer in her hand called an AstroPi. What was that thing you were holding in your hand?
So that is an AstroPi, which is an augmented Raspberry Pi computer that has an attachment of sensors, which are both environmental and movement sensors, so things like an accelerometer, a magnetometer, a gyroscope, temperature, pressure, and humidity sensors. And these are all retrofitted onto an AstroPi computer and then enclosed in an aluminum flight case, which has been certified for spaceflight.
What are they doing there?
They are being used for student experiments. So we run a challenge every year called the European AstroPi Challenge, and this allows students to design different experiments using code. And if they win the competition, it's uploaded to the ISS.
Okay, so what kind of students are we talking about? Like really like high-tech geeks, or can anybody join, or what's the sort of your average student taking part in this competition?
I would say both. So it can be both for first-time coders, so really, really entry-level students, and also for more advanced coders, some students who have a little bit of experience. If they want to take on a different challenge, this is an interesting program for them as well.
Have you been impressed by some of the stuff they've come up with?
Absolutely. It's astounding, really, what the students come up with.
What's the top thing so far?
Oh, one of the really, really cool ones from this year is the AstroPi IR camera is looking out of one of the windows facing the Earth. So a Portuguese team is using the AstroPi to take pictures of the Earth, and they're comparing their pictures to older satellite image pictures for forest fires. So if their images see that they are maybe picking up traces or images that look like the satellite imagery, they know that perhaps there was a forest fire in the past or there's an active fire there at the time.
Let's take that Portuguese team, for example. How are they controlling the computer? Or have they programmed it all completely into it before it goes up?
Yeah, exactly. So they've programmed everything into it beforehand. They've tested their flight or their codes on ground before flight. We check the codes to make sure that they're abiding by everything that it needs to fit with on the ISS. Then it's uploaded to the ISS, and it is automatically started through commands that we send.
But computers break down all the time. What happens if something goes haywire up there?
It's a difficult question. We have lots of different mechanisms in order to check the computers, and of course, before we start anything like this, we do a lot of maintenance checking to make sure that everything's in order, and we problem solve and troubleshoot way before we start any of the programs. And in that case, and some things that we've had to do in the past, we take them one at a time and fix them and make sure that everything's in good order before we start the program.
There's a lot of excitement here in this building for this upcoming mission. What are you most excited about with Horizons kicking off for you?
I'm a scientist by background, by education, so I'm of course always interested to see what the science results come from the experiments. There's a lot of really interesting work going on right now. And for education, I think we're specifically excited to see an uptake of the program in Germany. So, we think this is a really great push, having Alexander going back up to station. It's really exciting, and we're hoping that a lot of German teachers and students will get involved in the programs too.
And finally this week, it's no secret how hard it is to become an astronaut. You have to be, well, fit. At all kinds of things, of course, but in particular, you have to be in good physical shape. But is it all about push-ups and sit-ups? I don't really know. That's why I had to pull aside Nora Peterson, who is the personal trainer of Alexander Gerst, to ask her about how to train astronauts.
So definitely you should know squats and resistive training exercises. You definitely should be well trained in static and core muscle exercises that support you in many other exercises as well. Well, how to train an astronaut is not such an easy question to answer, because it's definitely different from just going to a gym and doing something. and also the conditions in which we are trying to support and perform the astronaut training is different, because they're supposed to work out in an environment that is different.
Right. So Alexander Guest does more than just like sit-ups and lat pulls and works on his deltoids. What's one of the really important things that you try to get done with him?
Well, the astronauts, when they are in the weightlessness, they need to train specifically those muscles that are gravity-dependent and that we need to work around, to move and to stand upright in a gravity environment with training hardware that is not always comparable to
dumbbells and barbells.
Well, dumbbells in space would not work, for example. So you need other hardware that is gravity-independent, that create pressure and resistance on other ways than on ground.
So like bands and stuff like that, or...
Well, in the earlier times, bands were used, but they were not very efficient. The resistance is not high enough with elastic bands, and the way of how the kind of the load develops is also not comparable to weightlifting with dumbbells. So now the newest devices use a pneumatic system.
What is it?
Pneumatic system. So ARED, for example, creates a resistance via a pneumatic system. So it's a vacuum inside, and with this you can regulate the resistance in the system.
Do you use it here down on Earth?
Not for my own training, because we don't have one here. It's only in Houston.
Only in Houston?
Yeah.
If you had one, would you use it?
I don't think so, to be honest. Only to know how to work with this. And we have, of course, trained with this as well, to know what it feels like and to know the technical implications of working on it in space, more or less, trying to think how this would feel like. But for my personal training, I would use all the other additional nice tools that we have. So it's very limited, the opportunities and training possibilities you have on a space station. And that's also the hard part, because you have to kind of force yourself always on the same devices to work out intensively on a daily basis.
You hear tall tales of how fit astronauts are. Can you just give us a sense of how fit Alexander Guest is? Because he blows me away just looking at him. Like, he scares me.
He's definitely very fit. And he takes care of himself, and I think that's really important and a very good feature also for going well through the mission. But generally, the astronauts don't need to be super athletes. Some of them are, but it's not a requirement. However, we cannot really put it down to numbers. It's very individual, and we are also still learning in trying to identify how fit astronauts need to be in general. But I don't worry about Alex at all. He's in good shape, and this will be a good mission from this point of view for sure.
And that is all for this week on Spectrum. At this point, I guess all we can do is wish the teams involved in Wednesday's launch all the best and hope for safe travels up to space. If you want to check out how the Horizons mission is going, please by all means follow us on our website, dw.com/science, or on Facebook, DW Science, or Twitter, that's DW_SciTech. If you want to tell me I'm doing something wrong or right, then please drop a line to spectrum@dw.com. That's it. Thanks for listening, and have a wonderful week ahead.